This is a recording of the meeting entitled Freedom from Active Addiction with the speaker Steve B. from Windsor, taped at the California Mid-State Regional Convention of NA No. 2, held in Modesto, California on Friday, June 26, 1992. This tape was produced by Choices, Tapes, and Etc., Visalia, California, for an area code 209-738-9447 or 1-800-821-4888. In observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all NA speakers. When the talking ends on side one, immediately turn to side two to hear the rest of the message. Thank you.
Steve B. from Windsor is our speaker tonight.
Thank you. I'm Steve. I'm an addict. And I got to get this close to me so you can hear because I talk real low. Is this one affected also? Although maybe I could push it away. Yeah, this isn't one of my favorite things to do in NA. But seems like ever since I got here, somehow I've subjected myself to getting into positions to have to do this sort of thing. And I really haven't gotten used to it yet. I say yet, hopefully, I guess. The topic kind of leaves it wide open for me to talk about recovery, which is what we would all be talking about, I think, at NA meetings. I didn't get here with what I got going for me now. I got here pretty literally a wreck. I was so full of fear that I couldn't lift my face, my glance off the table for fear that somebody would notice me. And I didn't speak at meetings for other than to state my name and my disease and that I passed for several months after I got here. I didn't certainly didn't know a lot of the words and a lot of the things we share at meetings. It was all foreign to me. You know, we have a lingo here. You know, I think of us as a subculture, at least some of us. Not meaning, you know, not good, bad, or indifferent. It's just the way I see it. I came out of a subculture of drug addiction and that life, and I had to turn that around. I had to start losing some of those things that I brought in. I had to give some of them up. I had to start filling that void with NA, with hope, with love, with faith, etc. And it was tough. It was real tough. The first year was probably the worst year of my life, and I'm including my using years. At least it felt like it, mostly because I could feel, I guess. It wasn't why I started using drugs, but it was certainly why I kept using drugs, to not to feel those things that I didn't like about myself and those pains and fears that I carried around and nurtured. Um, So I don't know. I kind of likened it to taking the drugs out of my system, to having my nerve ends just wide open to anything and everything that came along. And I used to consider myself an emotional cripple. And I don't think that, in retrospect, I don't think that I was crippled at all. I mean, I had every emotion there was, and then some, and they were always working in overtime. I was either too happy or too sad or too angry or too something. I was too much. I swung on a pendulum. I never knew what to expect from myself. It was literally a scary time for me. I struck my wife for the first time. I never hit her when I was using. For the first time I ever struck her, and I might say the last time, that one time was after I was clean for 6 months. And I wasn't even angry. I don't know where it came from. Scared me a lot. I guess, you know, I got here. I'd never done any time in prison. I'd done a few bouts in the county jail for real minor stuff, and was able to always bail out of any bust I was in. And never really understood, never really understood freedom of any kind, really. Never, you know, just certain things you just take for granted. That's one I took for granted. I felt like, I didn't get busted. I didn't do time. I wasn't behind bars. I didn't get caught in that cycle. And I felt like I was free. But boy, I had no idea. I had no idea what freedom was about. And I like to think that I still don't have any idea. I like to think that I'm still growing. Is this working all right? Yes? Okay. You can hear me? Can I get closer? Is that what I should do? Where was I? It doesn't take much. No, freedom. Freedom is a very elusive thing. I gain it and lose it daily. I'm free from active addiction. Have been for a long time. And this thing just went out. I've been clean a long time, and I don't, I still step back into my prisons once in a while, sometimes daily. I like to think that I can get out of them a lot quicker now than I used to, because I don't like suffering. I don't like pain. I don't like all those emotions that you can go through that kind of hurt. Although there's sometimes when usually after they're over, I'm grateful that I had them. My father just passed away about a month ago, and for years and years it seemed like my life had been spared of a lot of that sort of thing. Everybody in my family has survived. In fact, I can remember when I was a kid, I remember telling my mother that am I doing this, or is there something wrong here? Okay, you're not doing it. I told my mother that I hope I die before any of you do, any of the family, any of my friends, and she told me that it sounded to her like I was a little bit selfish. And I didn't know what to do with that one, except that I tried not to think about that anymore. But again, in retrospect, I think that she had a real good point, because it kind of gives you a little insight into the way I felt. I didn't want to hurt behind something happening to someone else. I'd rather be the one to go. And I suppose I spent the better part of 20 years after that time in my childhood kind of making excuses for my existence and trying to keep as low a profile as possible. In any case, I haven't had to go through a lot of that pain. A lot of that pain that I just had gone through with my father's passing, and it's strange. It was painful. It was a good pain. In fact, I'm just talking about it now, which I haven't for quite a while, for a few weeks. I'm starting to get a bit of it, and it's not bad. It's not bad. It's real, and I'm grateful that I have those feelings. I think those feelings protect me from getting nuts. They're signs that I'm alive inside. I also had the opportunity to meet some people from around the world about a week after that. Some people from around the world at the conference that just blew me away. People that spoke different languages and had different color skins and different cultures. And what a thrill. And I thought, well, here, I just lost my father, but I gained friends from around the world. It was a really, really emotional time for me. And I'm glad that I didn't try and hide that too much. I started crying in a meeting full of these people, and it was okay. I don't know that they all understood what I was going through, but I don't think it matters. I felt safe there. And I guess that's the kind of freedom that if I don't think about it, I really take for granted. But given the opportunity to think about it and consider it, it's just a beautiful gift. Like I said, when I got here, I didn't understand. I didn't understand anything. I had no idea what this was about. It wasn't as big as this, but it didn't matter. And in fact, it was probably helped me, because a big meeting was 20 people, and we got to know each other and got to be real tight, because there was nobody outside. You know, this was a lot of years ago. And I'll tell you, we dropped all those things at the door, mostly. We had a few arguments inside, but once people came through the doors into those meetings, all of that junk was usually put aside, and there was a real closeness there. And I'll tell you, the people that I grew up with that first year, I still know and love, and I don't get to see some of them. Of course, some of them aren't here anymore. And I get to see a couple of them on a fairly regular basis. And it's like... the first year here is like childhood. You know, you come in and it's what I felt. and felt so close to these other people that in other circumstances I wouldn't have had anything to do with. Gained a trust. I'll tell you though, I have to talk about this because it's my experience. There were only four meetings in town, and I was told to go to a meeting every day, so I did. So guess where I went? I even read the literature. I didn't identify a lot with it, but I read it. I was instructed to read, and I would just pick out those places where somebody would tell me, read this page, read that page, read this chapter. And the difference that I felt was, it's hard to explain, except that I would go to an AA meeting, and I wouldn't be a participant. I was a visitor, and but I noticed something there. The people were they were happier. They were happier than we were in NA. They talked about love a lot more, and they hugged. They did things like that. Well, we didn't, and we learned to, but we sure didn't. Yeah, and it was a strange thing, and I would go to these meetings, and besides watching these other people, I would watch myself, and I learned a lot about myself. And I never knew what to expect. I never knew what to expect from me. I would go to some meetings feeling really good, and come out feeling like I wanted to climb into a hole someplace. Don't know where it came from. Probably something somebody said at the meeting kicked off some cells in my brain. I would go to meetings sometimes really down and hear something that would just lift me right off my seat. And I guess in a way I was learning how to communicate with myself and watch myself and start to understand myself thinking of it in terms of the program, that's you always hear you can't love someone else if you don't love yourself. Well, I don't think you can learn to know other people until you learn to know yourself. Or the better you know yourself, the better you're going to know someone else. The better relations that I'm talking to you. I'm sorry. The better relations I'll have. I would even run little tests. I do this at those meetings, not at NA meetings. But I would find myself over against the wall, feeling bad, and there was a 10-foot swath around me. Nobody would get near me. I'd move out in the middle of the room. The same thing would happen. And those times that I felt good, I'd be out in a room and surrounded, so I tried it over against the wall, and I was surrounded there too. It's like I just sent out some really terrible, terrible vibes. It must have been pretty ugly stuff. I don't know, but the lesson there, I guess, for me was, you know what? I don't even know if there is a lesson for that. Other than the fact that what I was trying to get at before was this communication with myself. And that was, of course, only verbal thinking sort of thing. It wasn't working steps, really. It's kind of in line with working the fourth step, though. I kind of jumped right past a few. Something I wanted to talk about those first meetings. I got clean about 26 years ago, and there were only four meetings in Southern California, and we were all kinds of people. we were black and we were brown and we were white and we were all kinds of sexes. And like I said, we dropped that stuff at the door. And because outside there was no other meeting to go to. There was no other place to go to. And what I see now, we were just talking about this at a meeting last weekend about prejudice. And I don't think there's a human being in this world who is void of prejudice. I don't know that I've met any. I don't know that I ever will. But it's something I try and strive for. We have so many meetings and so many different people, in at least in our larger cities, that you can go to a meeting almost every night of the week and be with someone that looks like you and sounds like you. I can go there. I can go where everybody's more my age and my color, and talk the same way I do. And I can avoid all that other. And in a way, I guess that's good for newcomers for identification purposes, to have places to go where there's more identification there. But there's a drawback, and I think we lose something. I think we really lose something. Something to do with our third tradition. You know, the first meeting I ever went to, I was jumped on by about two guys that kind of got on my case because they said I didn't look like I was ready. Well, I wore a suit to my first meeting, and I may not have looked like I was ready. I felt like I was ready. As it turns out, I wasn't ready. I was ready about 3 years later, but that was a real tough one. I mean, I don't know if that made a difference in my life. I know it gives me something to talk about now and something to think about once in a while and something to remember when I see new people come in the door and look a little bit different than I do. They figured that because I had them clothes on that I hadn't lost it all, that I should have been looking like a bum or something, whatever that looks like. I felt like I just, you know, climbed out of a gutter. I don't think we can make that, I don't think we as a group can make that decision. Who's ready for this this fellowship, and who can come? And that's another freedom that I like I said I like to strive for, is to get rid of my prejudices. I do carry them. Well, I've been around this fellowship a couple of times for about 3 months at a time, for a couple of times, and then remember after the last time I used going home from my first meeting after that. Fortunately, there was a fellow there at the meeting that I had met at the meetings that had called my house on the weekend, and my wife told him that I had used, and he says, that's all right, tell him he needs to get back to a meeting. And I got back to the meeting, because the last time I had done that, it was about 2.5 years before I got back, and I was scared. And it was a Mother's Day, and I went off to a meeting, and in Los Angeles, and don't remember a thing about the meeting, but I do remember the feelings afterwards. I was just so depressed and so scared and willing. I don't guess I was been more willing in my life as I was at that moment. And I started on my way home from that meeting. I took the first three steps. And I haven't had to take those three steps quite like that since. But I made a decision. And I didn't really use the word surrender. I don't even know if I understood the word surrender, except other than reading it and maybe in a newspaper. But my word for it was I felt like I give up. I give up. I can't do it anymore. Something or something, somebody out there has got to have an answer for me because I don't. And I didn't know it at the time, but I guess I was feeling the first part of that freedom that we're talking about here, freedom from active addiction. I was still physically tuned to drugs, but I was starting to feel that emotional freedom. It lifted a lot of things off of me because I just figured, I told myself, I'm never going to use again, even if it means not having any fun, which I think about now is really bizarre because I was about as miserable as you can get. I'm still thinking in terms of having fun. That was a turning point in my life. Definitely was a turning point. I kind of made a commitment to ask other people, and there were, I had something built in, another gift, and that was if I asked someone to do something, if I asked someone for guidance, then I was bound to follow that guidance, whether I liked it or not. And I didn't have to worry about jumping off the bridge because I wasn't going to do that. I don't care if I asked for guidance and that's what I got. I wasn't going to do that, but nobody around here is bound to tell me that. And so I did selectively, I'll admit to that, I selectively asked for guidance. I didn't just, it didn't come out as a blanket statement to everybody in a room, but I learned how to trust a couple other people at these meetings. And that's all I needed was one, and here I had about three. Like I say, in retrospect, all I needed was one. So that's all it took. Another human being. The possibilities of today are much greater. I remember that first year as being really a horrible experience. I told you before, I was in pain a lot. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to act. I had problems. I'd been married for several years, had a family, and my wife was about to leave me when I arrived here. And while I was using, I was always at home at night, sometimes late, but I was always at home overnight. And here I was going to these meetings every night and didn't even come home some nights, just stayed at my sponsor's because the meetings were 30 and 40 miles away. And we get into these long meetings after the meeting, those really good meetings, you know, where you can just ask questions and get answers all night long. They're beautiful. I went through that for quite a while. Started to consider asking someone to seriously be my sponsor. I'd assumed that one guy was when I got here, and so, how do you ask for sponsors? One of my questions, right? And the guy that is now my sponsor, he says, well, you go up to somebody and grab them by the elbow, and you ask them to be your sponsor. Simple enough. I thought there was a lot more to it. I did, though, in considering a sponsor, consider a lot of other things, I picked a guy that was married because I was. I picked a guy that had children because I had children. He didn't have a job, but from what he was talking about, he was willing. I had a job. So I spent a lot of time with this guy. I think my wife learned to hate him. She had for years stuck by me and tried to help me, and then all of a sudden I was going to someone else for help, and there was I'm sure a lot of jealousy, and well, they're very close now. I don't know, I'm kind of losing it. I guess I need that red ball. I never saw that before. When I saw the first ball get chucked out there, I thought, is she mad? What did she do that for? Well, I like to get hung up on the first year. It was a very eventful year. I think in terms of my growth in this fellowship, and that first year was like this, you know, now I'm kind of like that, and, you know, once in a while I take a little bump up and sometimes a bump down, but that first year was tremendous. It was tremendous. There was so much to learn. Like I said, you have to learn a whole new culture, a whole new language here. Just in order to feel like you fit in. See, I'm talking the way I felt then. I mean, what the hell did I know? But I needed to fit in. I needed people. I needed people desperately. The people that I had before I got here weren't into helping me. They were into taking my money and using me, just like I was into taking their money and using them. And I didn't feel that here. So I was very desperate to belong here. They gave me little chores to do, and boy, I relished in that. I got to pick up the mail at the mailbox, and that was a thrill to me. Once a week I'd go over and pick that sucker up and bring it in, and before a year was out, I was a secretary of a meeting, and that was a thrill. Quite a responsibility. I had an excellent teacher. I was talking about the steps, the first three steps, and I told you I took them in a very short span, like, you know, driving down the Pasadena freeway, the part that I was on is only about 3 or 4 miles long, and I get off of it. Well, I took them on the Pasadena freeway, bawling and scared, but it was very, very easy, and I didn't really understand them before I got on that freeway, and I had taken them by the time I got off. So I had no argument against him. No argument. I was insane, and I was willing enough to accept anything. I accepted the group, other people. But I'll tell you, getting to taking a fourth step was a whole different animal. Took me Well, I don't suppose I was even fully clean when I took the first three, but I certainly was, but I took the fourth for the first time, as it was probably about 6 months later. And I try to encourage people to do it sooner because of I feel like the more desperate I am, the more comes out, the more honest I can be. I've subsequently taken more, and in that have learned a lot about Steve. Steve has a lot of good things going for him, and he has a few that aren't so good. And I pull the ones that aren't so good out every so often and work on them, and try and keep up the ones I am good at. And after having taken the inventory, I got to sharing it with another human being as quickly as possible. And it wasn't your most thorough inventory, but I'll tell you, it was all about me and drug addiction and my fears, and it was about those things that I was scared most. And a few years later, I was into that mood again to take an inventory, you know, scared again. And actually, it wasn't a few years. It was more like about 6 months later. I took another inventory, and it was based just primarily on my other addiction, which was kleptomania. And, it was amazing. Because I had been clean for about a year, and here I went through these motions of admitting that I was powerless over my stealing. I caught myself stealing from a woman I'd been stealing from for years, and all of a sudden it was no longer acceptable to me. It was a blow, because before that it was something I did, and all of a sudden I was in the depths with this thing of stealing, and I was in her living room. She was sound asleep on a couch, and my sponsor was outside working. He was working for me then, and boy, all of a sudden I just felt really bad. And, you know, as bad as I felt, I couldn't put the money back. I had to take it. It was like having fixed already, you know. I was powerless over it. I took it to my sponsor the next day, and he advised me, and I was writing that night. So here's, you know, within the second 24 hours, I was already writing inventory about something that I had just admitted to myself the day before. And I wrote all night. I stayed in his back room, and I wrote all night. And I took a fifth with him the next morning. And something happened in that inventory that hadn't happened before. He was listening very closely to what I was saying. Didn't say a word. And when I was all finished, he went back, and it was like he heard every single thing I said, and he started helping me make some decisions about what I had to do about it. And truthfully, as bad as I felt, I was feeling better rapidly. It was a great experience. And one of the really good things about it is that my experience before, it took such a long time going through these steps that I didn't really visualize them, you know. It's like I had forgotten about the last one while I was taking this one, you know. This one, it happened so fast that I could just I could see recovery. I could feel recovery. I just like this thing just being lifted and gone. And I'll tell you, I haven't had to steal anything since then. I'm not telling you I haven't stolen since then. I haven't had to. And there's a big difference in for me. Freedom from that. That's a great one. I've done it on a couple other subjects, but none with quite the results that that one had. I became immediately following the fifth step, I became ready. I became willing. I didn't make restitution on that for about 3 days because both he and I needed to think about it a lot, because the woman that I was working for, that I was stealing from, was almost 90% of my job. She's the only one that ever stuck with me, because before that we had been drinking partners. And so I had my family to think about in taking that step to make restitution. You know, was I prepared to lose my job? Was I prepared to leave my family without an income? And the guidance I got and the answers I got was, well, I had to do that, and I did. I made that amends, and it didn't go well. I didn't lose my job, but it didn't go well. It hurt her. And, I kind of wished I hadn't done it afterwards, but can't take those things back. That's why, that's one of the steps that one needs to be very careful in taking, I think. As it turned out, though, a few months later, I got another kind of an answer for that. I broke my leg in a motorcycle accident and ended up without a job anyway. And, it's before that too. By the way, I was introduced to this program by my doctor, and he knew me a long time before he introduced me to it. I'm not sure why he took so long to tell me about it, but he did. Anyway, so he knew about me, so I had no problems in going to him and talking to him about the way I felt and things. In fact, he let me come in there for nothing, and he'd just sit there and listen to me for 15 minutes anytime I wanted, and it was great. But I went in, and he wasn't there this one day, and his partner, who was his brother-in-law, was there, and I told him, you know what, I don't know what's wrong with me, and I don't want any pills, but I need something. I need vitamins or something, because, you know, I have a hell of a time getting out of bed in the morning, and I just don't feel like doing anything, you know. And I don't know how long I talked, but he listened, and then I stopped, and there was this real long pause, and he says, well, Steve, what is it you don't like about your job? What is it you don't like about your life? And it's, yeah, I mean, it threw me a curve. I didn't, you know, I was putting it all on the physical being, and it was all inside. And I guess in my own way, I was, after that, I was praying for some kind of change and not knowing how to go about getting it. And I got it with a broken leg, and it was easy to make some decisions after that. I decided I could be poor anywhere, so I moved from Southern California to Northern California, and there were meetings in San Francisco and Berkeley at that time, so I figured I was safe, and I was about 50 miles away from them, but I could get to those all right. And so we went north, and quite a radical change in my relationships with the because they were a long ways away and I didn't have any income. I rode the bus to San Francisco on Friday nights, and about every other Tuesday night I drove to to Berkeley. And I even knew some of the people there before I arrived because they were from Southern California. And after a while I got a meeting going in Sebastopol, up by Santa Rosa, and a couple of guys from AA helped me get it going, and supported it for a while, and then once in a while people from the city would come up, and they had the treatment centers were called recovery houses. There was one in town just started up, and they started coming, only bummed me out. They'd only come about every other week, so I never knew what to plan for. And I got a resentment going for them because I started feeling like an outsider at my meeting, you know. Because they all knew each other, and I was by myself otherwise. And I spent a few nights alone, too. Those were okay, too. Hated to throw all that coffee away, but that was the least of it. I got to do a lot of reading in that time and a lot of thinking, and it was good. Just be available, you know. Got to do some funny things, you know. Got to do H and I work at the strangest places. Drove all the way up to a nut house up north of us in Ukiah, and didn't remember anybody there, but there's a few people that have come to me afterwards and since then, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later, and remembered me. And also went to a reform school, juvenile hall. It was for girls. There were no women, and I don't know how or why I got into that situation, but I did. I was going to a meeting once a week in this girls' reform school. Very strange. I stayed out of trouble, by the way. Didn't make any contacts. How long is this meeting? Oh boy.
Give me the ball.
Well, I think I started to get off on a service resume there, so I had a cool one. Although I can't say enough about it. I went through that period of my life about 5 years, I guess, commuting a lot to the city for fellowship, and trying to keep a meeting going until there was one of those big blowouts between AA and NA in the town there, and it was I don't know. AA didn't know up there didn't know how to accept NA, and they started telling us we couldn't come, and I tried to tell them that I was different, and I think they were afraid of the kids in this recovery house were pretty wild, and they looked different. You know, they looked like hippies to those folks up there, and you got to remember this was 20 years ago, and different mindset then, and you know, I didn't feel welcome in my own meeting. I didn't feel real good in my own meeting, and I damn sure didn't feel welcome in those other meetings. So I don't know. Over a period of about a year, I just kind of backed off until I wasn't going to meetings at all. And what I was doing, I was caught in that 5 to 10 year syndrome where, well, I've got it now. I want to go out and put it to use. I don't know. It happens to a lot of people between 5 and 10 years. A lot of people.
I feel like, well, I got back, you know, I made it back clean. But I was, you know, I'd learned all these things, and I just, you know, took it, went and just flew with it. I got to know my family real well, and we got to do things together, and I got involved with my business, and the guy that helped me set the business up was like a sponsor to me. I never formally asked him, but it's exactly what he was to me. He was also my bookkeeper, and he was also a psychologist, and he was everything all rolled into one package for me. It was great. And I saw him daily, so we talked program and things like that daily. We talked about honesty daily. We talked about this way of life daily. And it was like I didn't need those meetings. And plus I was commuting for about almost 100 miles a day. Well, it became very hard for me to get back. I don't know. I tried several times, and he would encourage me by saying, oh, you know, they got this new meeting over here. And I said, oh, yeah. He says, yeah, I went over there the other day. It was pretty good. And that's about as much as he would push me. But I finally got to a place where I started feeling a little bit scared, because I'd heard stories and I'd seen from my own experience that, you know, some people, you know, long periods of time don't guarantee a thing. They don't guarantee recovery. Not in themselves. It's what you do at that time. And I wasn't doing much. And I was getting a little scared. And I also felt real selfish. You know, like, I felt like I got mine, and you know, you guys get yours. And you know, had forgotten through that time that you keep what you have by giving it away. And I got back. It was really an odd experience. I felt brand new. I'd been away from meetings for about 3 years. Yeah, I mean, no meetings. And I got back, and I don't know, I guess about 3-4 months after I started going back, I went to one of those service meetings, because I knew some friends that from the city would be there, and I just wanted to go along to say hi and visit, you know, get some fellowship. And they were having elections that day, and somebody nominated me for secretary, and said, yeah, okay. And but I knew immediately, you know, if I commit myself to this, I know how I work. You know, I knew what I was like. I knew that with that commitment, there's no way I could give it up, and I'd be forced to stick around here. And that's exactly the way it's worked since then. When I make those commitments, and I make them to other people especially, I'm bound by them. Sometimes I think that works against me, but I think most of the time that works for me. I've gotten involved in all kinds of that, and I guess that's where the carrying the message, you know, and the 12 step comes along. It's my niche, you know. I mean, it's what I've done. Speaking in this capacity is not, you know. I knew that a long time ago, and you know, I can muddle through, and hopefully I can carry a message to you know, if there's just one out there, that's all I could ask for. It's a funny thing about that. Seems like the more I try with you know, a newcomer, the least likely they are to stick around. And some of the residue that I try and force on one guy, another guy could be sitting next to him and hear it and gain something from it. I know this for a fact, because I overheard it at a meeting when this guy was at the podium talking, and he was describing a scenario where he was with some guys, and this one guy was talking to a sponsor, and the sponsor was telling him this, that, and the other thing, and he says, you know, I don't even like that guy, man. You know, I had nothing in common with him, don't like him at all, but you know what, he made a lot of sense, and it's just, you know, I've done this and done that. Yeah, well, I wasn't talking to him, and I knew that that was me that he was talking about, not personalizing, but with what he, you know, describing the situation, I knew that it was me, and I felt real grateful for that, because the guy that I was talking to is not here, you know, and he wasn't that night. So it's like, you know, you just, I never know. I have a very close friend now who lives in Sacramento who happened to show up at a meeting about, oh, I don't know, 7-8 years ago that I spoke at a little local meeting in Santa Rosa, and I had just come from talking with my sponsor's brother in San Jose, and had done a fifth step with him, and I felt really good that night. I felt really, really free and uninhibited, and in any case, this guy was at one of his first meetings, and he relayed this to me, of course, afterwards. But at that meeting, he came up to me after the meeting and thanked me, and introduced himself and thanked me, and we only talked for a moment or two, and he was gone. And then I saw him about a year later. I don't remember if it was a year. It might have been 2 years. Anyway, I saw him much later, and he was doing it. You know, he was in recovery, and really grateful. And he started talking about, you know, it was really neat that he remembered that night. You know, and then I didn't see him again for about 2 years, and then I moved to Sacramento from Santa Rosa. And showed up at a meeting, and there he was, and boy, he jumped all over me, and because it was somebody I recognized in a new town, and it was always an easy thing to do, and we became fast friends, and he would describe what happened that night in detail, and I remembered most of it, of course, from my own perspective, and I'm, you know, it's like, having that living proof out there that I do have something to add. Sometimes I need that, you know. I need a pat on the butt like everybody. And I need to know that I'm needed. And in turn, I guess a lesson for that for me is to let other people know that they're needed and how and why. It's just really a beautiful feeling to see. Because he, you know, he says that was his turning point. That was the time. Because up to that time, he was lost, and he had nowhere to go. And he wasn't a young guy either. He's older than I, and he didn't have too many runs left. And so I really feel grateful that I could, you know, be a part of his life in that way. And if he was the only guy I ever touched, you know, I would really be grateful for that. And I know that that's not true. I know that that's not true. For so many years, I worked with people, and it was a scary situation. I never knew what to say, when to say it, or how to say it, but I kept trying. And now I'm kind of grateful for brand newcomers don't usually approach me. They scare me anyway. I don't mean to be too glib about that, but it's the truth, you know. And I probably intimidate some. And I don't mean to. But I think I might. the people that come along anymore have been around a while and pretty well have their feet on the ground. I guess there's another thing, in knowing me, that I probably am not that good with a brand newcomer. But the people have been around a while and know something about this program, and about themselves and about how these steps work, then know how to use me. Are not expecting, some of those things that they might, because there's a few of us in this fellowship that are just terrific with newcomers. I know one that I think about every so often. He's probably the best guy I've ever met with a brand newcomer, but he's clean longer than me. He's never really been able to get his own act together very well. But he's so good with others, and like I said, we all have a place here, every single one of us. It may take us a long time to find out exactly where that place is, what that is, but it's there. Working with newcomers is, or with anyone really, is has really become a two-way thing for me. I have somebody that I have called a sponsor on and off from day one, same guy. But for various reasons, sometimes we don't communicate for long periods of time. And in fact, at a time, had a falling out, even like maybe brothers might. And fortunately, that didn't last too long. But now. In working with others, I get as much out of those people as I'm sure they get out of me. I know it for a fact. I know it for a fact. It's a two-way street, and there are times when I initiate the call, not very often, but once in a while, and there's at least one guy in a room that can attest to that. I turn his dime around every so often, get feel a little guilty about it, but had to get him off the subject, right? I was thinking on the way over here that they had misprinted this thing, and then I read it and saw that they had it, absolutely right. And I had a ton of things to talk about, and I probably should have just not thought about it at all, and I probably would have saved some of it. But I'll tell you what, I've kind of run out of steam here. Don't know that I've shed any light on freedom from addiction, but possibly a little about my own experience, and that it does work for long periods of time. And I'm grateful to be here. Thank you very much.